Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Mad Tech Podcast Special, this week focusing on the rise of advertising and marketing opportunities in gaming. Probably one of the most talked about parts of the ad tech and martech industry throughout 2020, gaming has certainly had a spotlight cast its way since the start of the pandemic all the way back in February or March last year. In part, this has been due to the huge lifestyle changes we've all been exposed to in the intervening nearly 12 months, but it's also because of the knock-on consequences of the rate at which anything digital has been adopted during a period when we've been pretty much prevented from doing most things in an analog or an in-person way. But for those of us who are immersed in digital advertising and marketing on a day-to-day basis, gaming adoption and the marketing opportunities that come with it have been on the rise for a while. It's as though things just got a whole lot more sophisticated very quickly. To understand a bit more about the tangible opportunities for brands in marketing and advertising and gaming, and what might be holding some of those brands back, I spoke with Tom Simpson from Ad Colony and David Porter from Unilever for this episode. Here's how that conversation panned out. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's special edition of the Mad Tech Podcast. Special edition because we're going to be talking about the subject of gaming. And so consequently, I've got two experts. There you go, lads, introducing you as experts already, telling you that I didn't need an expert point of view, but now I do. Expert guests for this week. David Porter, VP for Global Media Unilever, Sub-Saharan Africa and APAC.
Correct. Hi.
Amazing. Hello and welcome. And Tom Simpson, SVP APAC. Hello, Tom.
Hey, I'm still reeling from being described as an expert. You did say it was opinions only, not facts. So, I mean, that's something we can work with.
This is exactly it. I like to set everything up with, movable expectations. I wanted to kick things off by having a chat with you about a predictions piece that we posted on the gaming economy back on the 19th of January. So this piece was edited by our gaming economy editor, Matt Broughton. This was one of three pieces that he posted, chatting with a number of gaming luminaries about what to expect in the gaming industry in 2021. This particular piece focused in on three points of view that were relevant to marketing and advertising. There was three sort of main pillars of predictions for 2021. The first was that social gameplay will become a really critically important part of the gaming industry. So the idea that gaming interactions will become much more like a social media platform and will enable gamers to interact in ways that people currently interact on social media platforms. And the idea behind that is that this will also really give advertisers and marketers an opportunity to get involved in gaming advertising in ways that perhaps haven't been as alluring as they might have been before. The second prediction was that the diversification of gaming audiences, as we know, gaming popularity has increased hugely in the last almost 12 months. I can't believe I'm saying that. The pandemic's almost been around for 12 months. And that has definitely fueled an increase in gamers over that period of time. And that has also led us to realise that a gaming audience is much more diverse than many of us thought it was before. And when I say many of us, I'm referring to people that perhaps weren't gamers and have now become gamers, but also to those in the industry that made lots of assumptions about who gaming audiences comprised of. So the idea is that diversification of gaming audiences will drive more spend from brands and advertisers as marketers see an opportunity to connect with a wider audience. Then the third prediction is that 2021 will see a much bigger increase in other sorts of advertising formats in a gaming environment, and specifically those that are less obtrusive. The gaming environment will become much more seamless with advertising opportunities, and gamers will become a little more used to seeing ads and perhaps even interacting with ads, whether that's in-game play or whether that's product placement. But that's something that we're expecting to see increase in terms of on the technology side of the business in 2021. So whistle stop tour of those predictions. And of course, listeners, you can read the full piece on thegamingeconomy.com. David, I'm going to come to you. What did you think about these three highlighted predictions? Do they, as a brand marketer, do they feel tangible to you and familiar?
I don't mean this unkindly. I thought the predictions were quite predictable. You know, I mean, because they're reflecting changes we're all seeing. And if I just take the diversity point, I mean, My son and I are both gamers. So we've got something like a 45-year age gap. I'm mildly introvert. He's extremely extrovert. And we both have very different pandemics. So I'm going to be interested to see how this works. Because as an introvert that grew up playing arcade machines, I continue to game, but I'm doing it solitarily. Whereas his social life is now entirely formed around, well, for a lot of the time, when the times have been at their roughest through the pandemic, his social life has been based around the games and the social aspects of them. So I think you'll see a tremendous increase in that. And I think especially now that we've got a whole generation who are living in front of their screens for school and for pleasure, that's just that. That's how it's going to be. So the diversity point, I agree with. And I think the social point also I'd agree with. I'm not sure yet what opportunities it's going to bring for brands, specifically the fact that it's social. And I think really those opportunities are going to come from all the other formats. And especially if we're taking things offline to online and vice versa, I think, you know, when we get events back, I think gaming will be so well established that the face-to-face events will be something to be reckoned with. Mm. And if you, you know, being in Asia, we know that already, right? Just because of the scale of this thing here and the scale of the crowds that we were getting. Very interested to see if that Eastern strength in live events, when it meets the Western strength in kind of organized gaming teams, when those two things collide in the whatever the normal world's going to look like, that could be massive.
And just one thing on the idea of socializing in a gaming context becoming normal. As you rightly point out, that's becoming sort of second nature to lots of younger gamers. Do you think it's something, can you imagine that it's going to be something that will become very comfortable and normal for older gamers as well? And I mean, you know, older could be anything from, I don't know, 25 onwards. I'm not talking ancient. But, you know, that's usually the point at which that proliferation of technology becomes normal. Normalized, right, isn't it, when it's older generations find it quite easy to adopt and to understand and to interact with?
Yeah, I mean, as a person, as an end user, I'm still in the kind of don't talk to strangers mode of that. I'm watching my son playing exclusively within his friendship group and being responsible about that, because he literally sits next to me at his desk while I'm working and he's studying. And so I've seen, you know, I'm having my mind changed about that, but I do think it's going to raise massive issues around brand safety and just making sure we've got the technology and the will on the part of the platforms to make sure that we don't get into the brand safety issues which have plagued, you know, some other platforms for the last few years.
Tom, a point of view from you, particularly on the technology side.
Oh, on the technology side, I'm not sure I'm qualified to talk about technology.
Come on, Tom. Remember, I told you, you're looking for an expert point of view here.
Yeah, I know, but this is, I'm completely lost as to what I'm doing here. David makes some really good points. I think, you know, where we sort of get tangled up is when we talk about social, and somehow when we think about social, we sort of think about social media, and you know, social is just interacting with other people. It's engaging with other human beings. It's at the core of human culture and, you know, kind of our psychological makeup since we first kind of came down from the trees. So, you know, social is absolutely core to everything, and especially with gaming. The idea that gaming is not a social activity, when you look at, I mean, games that we've played for hundreds of years, thousands of years, who knows, you know, the first person to kind of pick up to get a round object and kick it around with a group of other people. I mean, that was social gaming. And all the way through, you know, parlor games, charades, board games, you know, gaming is such a social activity. Of course, it's a solo activity as well. So it's not that there haven't ever been social games. But so I think this idea that games are becoming social, yeah, absolutely. Of course they are, always have been. Those kind of like, you know, ways of socializing with other people while playing games will become more and more important. But I don't think it necessarily looks like social media. I think that's the other thing. I think gaming actually probably, you know, eats social media. So
each, replaces, you know, it, right.
It replaces it. It becomes the platform. So in the same way, you know, that social ate the internet 15 years ago and became the internet, fundamentally became the platform within which everything else is contained. I think gaming, you know, kind of eats social, and gaming becomes the platform where, yeah, I mean, where we hang out, spend a lot of time, talk to people, socialize. And I think most people would probably call that the metaverse. And once we get into the metaverse, then it becomes very interesting. Just touching on David's point around, you know, brand safety. I mean, wow, can you think of the brand safety issues inherent with virtual worlds where people are hanging out and doing, you know, doing what they, doing whatever they like? I mean, human beings create enough brand safety issues around kind of walls of text and images, and we've developed some great technology to kind of look at those walls of text and images and understand, you know, the brand safe nature of that. So there's some good technology in place to help us understand the internet as it exists at the moment and whether it's brand safe, and then help, you know, advertisers to place their ads in brand appropriate environments. But once we get into the metaverse and we're talking about fluid, you know, 3D worlds, I mean, that's going to be really difficult to control. Super interesting in terms of advertising opportunities. But yeah, I mean, crazy brand safety.
Does that make you feel a bit nervous, David, listening?
Well, yes. I spent a lot of my early years in the ad industry, in media agencies and ad agencies, working with what we used to call the record business. I think it's now the music business, right? Mm. And there was tremendous nervousness from some other established brands of getting involved in that kind of world because of its unpredictability. And I think we'll see something similar here in gaming, that brands really want, you know, are very keen to get involved, but they're going to want to try and do so in a way that there is some control in terms of safety. The critical thing there, of course, is that it doesn't become control of the complete environment, because the whole reason that this is attractive is that it's young people living their lives the way they want to live them. And if we start to try and impose rules on it, we become very inauthentic and then we lose them. So that's the balance we're going to have to strike. And I mean, I think a lot of brands are nervous about the need to be authentic, because, you know, the gamers will hold your feet to the fire, a brand's feet to the fire, in a way that no other audience would. But on the other hand, if you can be truly authentic and unstereotyped in the way you talk to that group, then it should become a bonus and a benefit. But we are going to have to make sure that we keep it safe.
Tom, could you sort of walk us through what the advertising opportunities in a metaverse environment might look like? I mean, it sounds like the world's your oyster, right?
What we've seen with COVID has been so interesting. And David, you know, talks about his son spending time with his friends in that gaming, you know, in that gaming environment, stuff that he was doing before, absolutely no doubt. But, you know, over the past 12 months, it's become so much more of a core experience for so many people. I think somebody, interesting quote I saw the other day about how the 21st century didn't really start until 2020. So it was actually, you know, it was COVID that really brought in this new era. And we've seen 5-10 years of kind of evolution in terms of culture and technology and economics in, yeah.
9 months, 10 months, yeah.
Yeah, completely. So, but, you know, bring that back to gaming and metaverse and what we've seen. So concerts in, you know, Fortnite, and people going along to watch concerts in Fortnite, people releasing movies within a gaming environment. So actually kind of the idea of being able to go to the cinema within a gaming environment. But really what we're talking about is the metaverse is a persistent 3D world that's always there, where you can always kind of jump in and go and hang out with people that you want to hang out with, play a game, but then also watch a go to a concert, watch a movie, buy things. I mean, big brands will set up shops in the metaverse. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And they won't just be, you know, brands like Unilever setting up supermarkets to sell people physical products. There will also be shops and retail outlets centered around NFTs, non-fungible tokens. So, you know, virtual objects, all sorts of crazy stuff. But I mean, it's a virtual world, and everything that is contained within the physical world will be contained within the world of the metaverse. So thinking about, you know, kind of how that relates to advertising, I guess, cinema advertising, as David said, getting involved with, you know, the music business and sponsoring kind of concerts. But, you know, beyond that, I think the more practical things, video, obviously, out of home. So kind of talking about native in-game, blended in-game advertising, that idea of out of home within a gaming environment, that's going to be huge. That's going to be super, super important. And then, you know, with that retail, the e-commerce opportunity is going to be really big as well.
How far away are we from some of those advertising opportunities right now? Because if we move on to one of the predictions that was mentioned, the rise of unobtrusive advertising, are we talking about some of those formats that we've currently got just becoming a bit more sophisticated?
I was just thinking back, the first time someone tried to sell me kind of virtual out of home on a platform game was around 1990. So this isn't new. I think what's different is the scale, and mobile has changed all of that and brought in casual gamers who just bring a scale which big brands really do appreciate. So it's not just that hardcore anymore. And I think also the way we can buy and the measures that we can put in place. So I think as programmatic meets gaming, that's going to be a real game changer for people like us who want to do this to deliver reach, and not because we think it's great fun to have this really intense, tiny relationship with one or two people in the gaming industry. You know, we're not doing it to be cool. We're doing it to achieve something. So I think that now we're starting to see programmatic show its face in a number of these areas, and I'm sure Tom can be a bit more specific about it. I think this is about to hit its tipping point.
I think the first thing to say is that the metaverse is still a long way away. Yeah. We're seeing people hanging out and watching, hanging out with friends and watching concerts. But yeah, I mean, the metaverse is a long way away. Actually, a lot of the opportunities are a lot more pragmatic, prosaic, right in front of us. And as David said, you know, that kind of the out of home within gaming environments is not a new thing necessarily. But when you plug programmatic into it, then it becomes super interesting, especially as David said, when you're looking at scale, when you're looking to reach consumers at huge scale, enabled, you know, and most of this is enabled by mobile gaming. So it's the combination of programmatic. So much of this, you know, new blended in-game advertising is addressable using data. So, you know, brand advertisers can bring their own data, or there will be data available in the marketplace. It's also, you can measure brand safety and viewability using third-party auditing platforms, the same as you would use for a standard programmatic buy. So, I mean, it's becoming a very kind of standard advertising play. If we really look at what's going on in gaming right now and the big opportunity, it's much more around something like rewarded video around mobile gaming. That's actually when we look at what big brands who want to, you know, get their message in front of consumers at scale, what they're doing, they are, you know, almost, yeah, the big push is rewarded video around mobile gaming.
Funny, when I first started hearing a lot about Twitch Bits, it was about the same time that we were also creating or trialing a thing called Ucoin, where instead of giving people physical premiums and incentives, we started to do it online through our stores and give them virtual credits. And when you think about the opportunities for these currencies to interconnect, I wonder what the exchange rate is for Ucoin to the Twitch currency. And we're starting to see the potential of these two worlds to collide at the same time. And as something that's happening in Asia, which I don't know if all your viewers will be as familiar with in the West, but we've seen a dramatic expansion of the gamification of e-commerce. So if you take, you know, the big events like 11/11, Singles Day in China, which is now a Southeast and North Asian phenomenon, you're playing games all the way through that to earn credits, to buy a particular product. Sometimes that's with a brand, sometimes that's with the platform. So that puts gaming right at the point of sale, which people have tried to do physically before in stores, and that theater and the engagement that it brings. And it just keeps people stuck to their phones and shopping. So that's probably not what most people think of as hardcore gaming or esports, but it's going to be a massive part of this very, very, very big world.
When you think of what's going to happen over the next 12 months, is there anything else that you think of that in terms of immediate kind of trends that we haven't necessarily touched on? Because I suppose it's somewhat connecting exactly what you just mentioned, Tom, the fact that the metaverse is actually quite a way off, but there's many practical things that are occurring in between now and then that are, that sort of accelerating the driving growth in gaming advertising.
I don't think you've missed it. I just don't know which way it's going to fall. When there was talk about how subscription models are going to become a big part of this, And I think, as with a lot of other platforms in the digital world, this industry hasn't yet found what its primary business model is going to be. Maybe it will have multiple ones, but I still can't work out whether this is going to be a primarily ad funded or subscription funded or some other structure. And maybe we'll see them all happen.
No, totally. I think there's a really interesting development on that, in that one of the things that has happened within gaming, and this is, you know, this is rewarded. And I think we're seeing rewarded video. I think we'll also start to see rewarded audio. I think rewarded audio is going to be a big, a big part of gaming monetization moving forward. But it's the rewarded element and the transparency about the value exchange of advertising that engenders. So the traditional ad model is, you know, here's some content and then, here's 3 minutes worth of ads. And there's no kind of real, for the lay person, there's no connection between the two necessarily. I think a lot of people don't really understand what ad funded or what an advertising model is. Whereas with gaming, with that rewarded element, it literally is, you're playing a game, you are out of lives, and here it is right in front of you. You want to pay to get more lives, to get, you know, this item that you want, whatever it is, a new kind of a new skin, or do you want to watch this ad and get the thing free? And the consumer research off the back of that is consumers prefer it. 2 out of 3 consumers feel positive about rewarded video versus 1 in 5 feel positive about pre-roll. So, I mean, consumers, you know, that old model of kind of the push in your face, watch the ads and shut up sort of thing. You know, rewarded takes us on from that. And it does. It's a much more transparent conversation about the value exchange. And it means that advertising sort of exists in this world of gaming in a very different way to how it exists in some of the older media models. And I think that makes it a real, and when we have conversations with developers, what we see is that they're big fans of rewarded video, rewarded advertising in general. They say that it makes their game stickier, and there's lots of, you know, there's research that backs that up, because consumers, where they can kind of get these rewards, will spend longer within the game because they can level up, they can play for longer, whatever it is, but they can do it in a way that they're comfortable with and they understand what's going on. They understand how a brand is funding this for them. So it's much better for brands as well.
I agree up to a point, Tom, although, you know, the fact that there's that value exchange going on is not an excuse for a brand to put up any old tosh just because they know people sit through it to get their credit. And I think this is something that's happening, maybe not visibly in the tech community, but when you talk to the creative agencies, I think that they're really on board with this for 2021, which is that generally brands have got to produce much better, much more authentic advertising if they're going to talk to this generation, who are much less tolerant of inauthenticity, much less tolerant of brands that don't demonstrate diversity in front of and behind the camera, et cetera, et cetera. So we can't, this is not just a technical issue. Yeah. And I know this is an ad tech or martech podcast, but I think how we use these spaces is every bit as important, because we don't want a world where people are hovering their finger over the skip button.
100%. I mean, to be honest with you, I feel like hearing you say that, David, that creative agencies are prioritizing that for 2021 gives me a great sense of relief, because in my hyper-casual gaming world, that's exactly what I do, hover over the skip button. I just can't wait, or the little cross, just can't wait to move beyond the ads. If they were better ads, better quality ads, that'd be fine, be more enjoyable.
Completely agree. And I think in the same way that, TikTok, God, should I be promoting TikTok here? But, you know, what was their tagline, which I thought was brilliant, was don't make ads, make TikToks. And it's probably a little bit OTT, but still it kind of talks about you've got to make, you know, your creative has got to be relevant for that environment. And I think, you know, yeah, for gaming. But what does a gaming relevant creative look like? I mean, I don't know. Maybe David's got some thoughts on that. But I'd also say, Rachel, you say that your finger's hovering over the skip button. Well, I bet that you go out and make a cup of tea during the ad breaks when you're watching The X Factor as well. So
no, because I do not watch The X Factor. We have multiple arguments here at Exchange Wire about who watches The X Factor. I don't consume any content that I can't control, basically. Don't watch anything linear anymore. Let's move on to a little bit of a Q&A with you both, but specifically touching on some of the experiences perhaps that you have of advertising, from a brand point of view, David, with respect to gaming. So we've talked already about, you know, some of the sort of mechanics around gaming advertising. But I wonder if you could talk a little bit from Unilever's point of view or from a brand point of view about the value of gaming advertising. Is this something that brands are still needing to be convinced of, or do you think we've well and truly gone beyond that moment and most brands are clambering over themselves to understand how they can advertise in a gaming environment?
A good question. I mean, it's still with, excuse the pun, Tom, but because gaming is still a very unruly industry, it's very hard to find there's amazing things going on all over the place, but it's not happening in the same way everywhere. So it does make it very challenging for a multinational to say, we're going to build a strategy around this, yeah, where we can consistently choose that we're going to work with esports, or we're going to work with the individual personalities, or we're going to focus on mobile. Because there's no one simple way of defining or organizing that. So as a consequence, I think people are doing a lot of stuff, but they're all baby steps. It's all test and learn. And the things you learn, you can't necessarily scale out with anybody else, because you're going to have to test again with somebody else that works in a different way. So it makes it deeply interesting, but slightly unnerving, I think, when you're trying to do something that can replace linear TV or out of home, or something that will reach a large number of people at scale and be commercially worthwhile. So I think as the organization arrives, I think this is going to change. And just going back to something we touched on earlier, I think once the kind of esports organization of the West hits the scale gaming of the East, notably Tencent, and when these things start to converge, I think we really are going to hit scale, and you'd be surprised at the people that will come into it. We did an online conference for all our marketers recently, which we organized out of Singapore, specifically on gaming. We had some amazing speakers come onto it. But I was most taken. I had the privilege of interviewing someone from MasterCard who had a really smart way of taking their special moments strategy and applying it to the gaming community. So they were on and offline with them. And it just struck me as being really thoughtful that they hadn't just bought into what someone was selling. They had very definitely reshaped what they were doing to fit their strategy. And I think that that's something that brands like ours have traditionally done with content around purpose, especially. So a brand like Dove that wants to help young women with self-esteem has always done a lot of films and a lot of on-the-ground events around that. And I think that that kind of work could lend itself very well to gaming as well. Not specifically that brand, but anyone that really wants to put their brand purpose across. Because it is this environment that demands real authenticity. Definitely more to come.
Are you also finding that, you know, within your sort of baby steps experiments, that there are some of the brands within Unilever that are more excited about it than others? And if you are, is there a theme?
I don't think there's a theme there. I mean, I think that there'll be a focus on youth, so you would expect certain categories to be pushing harder and faster than others. But if mobile gaming takes off commercially as a marketing opportunity the way I think it could and should, then I don't think we're just going to be restricted to those categories. So you might find something that may surprise you, like household cleaning suddenly finds its space in the gaming universe, because we're not, you know, as I said, my son and I are both gamers and there's 45 years between us. So there's no reason why this has to be exclusively about the kind of stereotypical hardcore gamer anymore. I said to, I mean, I don't know if either of you know the numbers, but I'm sure they're a fraction of the number of gamers on the planet.
No, absolutely. And David, you're being incredibly modest, because, I mean, Unilever is already focused around, mums as a key audience to capture via mobile gaming. And when you look at the demographics, I mean, one of the highest indexing demographics for mobile gaming is mums. Absolutely. Mm. And I mean, certainly in Asia, I mean, this goes globally, really, but it's slightly more skewed in Asia. You've actually, you've got a real 50-50 split male-female. You've got pretty level kind of indexed up the demographics in terms of penetration until you get to a slight kind of roll-off over 55 with slightly less gaming. You know, if you're a high net worth individual, you're more likely than average to have a mobile game on your handset. So, I mean, there's lots of stuff in there that kind of just says, look, it's just a scaled media opportunity.
Tom, from your experience then of say over the last sort of 10, 11 months, as you know, as the proliferation of gaming has just been marching forward, are you finding yourselves working with brands, you know, via agencies or either directly that have surprised you that you didn't necessarily think would be enthusiastic about gaming?
Over the past few years, we've seen, you know, the classic sort of early adopters with an opinion on what they want to do in marketing start to get involved with gaming. We saw a big kind of increase in fashion brands looking at gaming as sort of the new, same thing as happened with streetwear, street fashion, sports kind of crossover in the sort of in the 90s is happening with gaming. Their fashion brands are seeing gaming and kind of the culture and the look is a really kind of fertile environment. So that's, you know, that was a big thing. But yeah, I mean, certainly over 2020, we saw a lot of brands who are targeting just, you know, FMCG brands targeting wide, you know, demographics, all adults, you know, adults 18 plus, whatever it is. And yeah, I mean, just getting involved in gaming. I think the challenge for brands and marketers wanting to get involved in gaming, as David touched on, is where to start. And I think there's often a kind of a conflation of sort of gaming and esports all into one sort of thing. And it's not really like that. I mean, at Connolly, we look at it as a funnel quite clearly. And at one end, you've got mobile gaming, and mobile gaming kind of hits, you know, 80%, 85% plus of the any market. It reaches 85% of people in any market. People who play mobile games don't necessarily think of themselves as gamers. So, I mean, although there's still that need for authenticity, it's not quite as strong up around kind of, you know, that mobile gaming end. Sort of next level down would be core gamers, which is around 40% of any market. And there you've got, you know, it's a deeper engagement in gaming and more authenticity required. Next level down is streaming. Gaming streaming, which is something, you know, 25-30% of the market engage with gaming and streaming in some sense. And then at the kind of the tip of that funnel is esports, and around 10-15% of a market kind of engage with gaming and esports. As I said, you know, moving down that funnel, the opportunity becomes more focused and the need for authenticity becomes stronger. But I think, you know, frameworks like that are things that enable brands to choose where they get started and how to deploy their thinking around the gaming environment.
Tom, there's different levels of attraction in those two, if you take the two extremes. I think a lot of marketers, when they first start to learn about gaming, want to really focus at the lower end of the funnel, as you described it, where there's really interesting characters and there's excitement and, you know,
dynamic.
And the crowd, yeah, it looks amazing. But actually, where they end up is at the other end, talking to their traditional consumers, but in a much more engaging way through a housewife's mobile phone.
Yeah.
And nothing wrong with that. But so I think you may be right that we need to start thinking of these almost as two different industries.
I think gaming, or the way that we think about it, looks very similar to how we think about social media, in that if you think 15 years ago, we were all focused around driving that kind of viral video opportunity and doing something with what we would now call influencers. And that was, you know, kind of many brands' first steps into social media. And actually, where many brands ended up in terms of social media was using it as a reach opportunity to get ads in front of eyeballs at scale using targeting, blah, blah, blah. And it's similar to exactly the way you've just described, in that, you know, kind of the esports end looks super exciting. And it is, if you've got the time, if that's where you want to spend time. But actually, there's the other end of it, which is, you know, which looks more like video ads at scale.
That terrifies me slightly, which is in social media, you would get the odd kid who was allowed by parents to join a platform underage, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old, whatever. And there was some brand risk and some safety issues there. But I think that the global habit of parents of handing over their mobile device to very, very young children to game on scares the life out of brands.
Yeah,
because that is a completely uncontrolled environment, and that can be a 2 or 3 year old. So that's why I keep on going back to the brand safety issue. It's not about having age gates on platforms. It's something else.
Yeah. I mean, how do you navigate your way around that though? Like you said, it's such an uncontrolled experience. So, you know, is it then over to technology platforms?
There was an urban myth, and I'm going back a long time now, that in the days when Cara used to supply the French TV industry with its audience rating systems for TV, they always had a beta version that was a couple of years ahead that they used themselves, but while they sold the other one on. And there was a myth that they had a device in the home that could tell not only who was in the room, but what was in the room. So they could tell whether it was a man, woman, child, or cat watching TV at the time. And if that was halfway true, and I'm sure, you know, the mobile cameras have the capability now, I think you could have a safety gate based on, you know, judging the age of the viewer.
Yeah.
Slightly crazy and probably infringes a million lines of GDPR.
I was about to say that, exactly. That's starting to sound quite creepy, you know. I'm just thinking about how many people I talk to that tell me they turn off their speaking devices in the household because they're worried about people spying on them.
I'm not advocating it, by the way. I have to stress that. I'm just saying I tend to think with technology, where there's a will, there's a way. And when the problem becomes greater than the fear about the solution, then you opt into it.
What about other issues or barriers to adoption from a brand point of view, David? Are there other things that have made brands reluctant and hesitant to get involved in advertising in a gaming environment?
I had a list and I think I've just spent them all already.
Pretty much.
So it's just about the more organized and the safer we can make this, then you'll get organizations like, well, Federation of Advertisers, which I represent, Mobile Marketing Association, these guys will get behind it and really make this an area that is deserving of more spending. So I do feel its time has almost come, but we just need to get that the safety and the measurement right. Maybe, Tom, have you got something on how we can measure this that will reassure people like me?
It depends what you're doing, doesn't it? I mean, if you're executing rewarded video around games, then you're going to measure the same things that you'd measure executing Facebook or YouTube, in that, you know, it's going to be impressions at the very top, and then it's going to be viewability, and you're going to probably want to measure human and audible as well. So it's a kind of a sophisticated viewability measurement. You'll want to measure fraud and ensure that fraud isn't a big part of the mix. And then you're going to, you know, take it all the way through to a brand equity measurement, and then possibly pin some kind of e-commerce and track it all the way through to a conversion, if that's what you're trying to do. I mean, clearly, if you've got upper funnel objectives, then you're just going to use ongoing brand tracking or brand equity to measure the outcome. So I think it's quite simple for a lot of advertising executions in gaming. It gets more complex when we're looking at blended in-game advertising, so, you know, out of home in the metaverse. So we can measure impressions, we can measure exposure, but what do we mean by exposure?
I think I remember having about a four-hour debate with that in the early 90s with someone who was trying to sell me power-up items for my client, which was Red Bull at the time. Yeah. Exactly what were they worth, and just nobody knew. But I'm really glad you mentioned fraud, because the thing, I mean, and this is a lot of the work that I do with the WFA for the marketing community, is the bad actors love new platforms. They absolutely adore them because they're the least organized and the least regulators, and they always get in there before the big money comes in. So heading that off at the pass would be a real gift back to the industry if we can find a way to stop IVT before it starts in this space.
Blended in-game, there are standards around it. Whether those standards kind of hold, at the moment we have an idea what we mean by viewable. So we can, you know, we can track viewability, we can prevent fraud. So those standards exist. Integration with, you know, the partners that you would use, the third-party auditors, the IASs, the Double Verifies, the Moats of the world, they will exist for blended in-game. So it's all there. The approach will evolve over time. It absolutely will. When we're talking about esports, I mean, that's getting into a, you know, very different type of space. We start looking at, you know, how do we understand the value of sports sponsorships? So there are lots of platforms that allow us, you know, when we're engaging in sports marketing, to track number of brand appearances on a stream, on a TV feed, and use that to understand the value of our advertising. So, yeah, I mean, techniques from the wider world of advertising need to be applied to gaming.
And I wonder if we're at a bit of a moment in time. So the both of you have already talked about how, the circumstances that the world's faced over the last 9 or 10 months has definitely added fuel to the acceleration of the digitization of every element of our lives. And of course, that's had a natural knock-on effect to gaming. But I also wonder if all of the conversations that we're having in the ad tech industry and martech industry around protecting users' data, refining the tools available for personalized advertising, better articulating the value exchange between in any kind of advertising model between user or consumer and brand and marketer. I wonder if all of those things are kind of converging at the same time that might make it possible to do exactly what David's just described, which is maybe as an industry get a bit front-footed.
I think it's very, very simple. We've got the benefit of 25 years now of digital advertising, and we've got the benefit of the recent conversations around user privacy and what users will and won't accept in an online advertising environment. We've got, the benefits of 10, 15 years of programmatic and an understanding of how to automate digital advertising, and understanding of how to use data to deliver that in a targeted way, and how to personalize messages so that they address users in the most relevant way possible. We've got all of this experience. We've got the opportunity to, kick off gaming before it goes hyperscale. In the right way, to embed those best practices and get it right from the start to keep the fraudsters out, as David said. And I think there's a lot of people really focused around ensuring that happens.
I think one of the marvelous things about the digital world now is it's not the same everywhere. It's not that there's one path to digitization that everyone follows at just slightly varying speeds. And as a consequence of that, there will be places on the planet where this becomes hyper sophisticated early. And we can take that learning and apply it everywhere else before anything runs out of control. So it's just about making sure, this is something I bang on our agencies about all the time, but making sure that what you do learn moves rapidly and gets applied, and you listen to other markets.
Any ideas about where you think that's going to happen next? Is it in this, you've mentioned it a couple of times, David, the idea of the collision between the perhaps organisation of the Western world and the entrepreneurial spirit in the Eastern world?
Well, I think bringing e-commerce into this environment and into this conversation is going to be super important if you want to play in Southeast Asia and probably South Asia, because we're also seeing the signification of e-commerce in those markets, and that's bringing gaming with it out of China. So I would add that into the mix for sure. Will it come the next year? I hope so. But also with esports, I've been massively impressed, and I can't quote names here, but on the conference we ran recently, we had quite a lot of the people who've been responsible for the organization of that as an industry and for bringing it in as an Olympic sport, etc. And they really do have their act together in ways that really surprised me. So I think, dare I say it, it may partly depend on whether Tokyo happens or not for the Olympics, but I think there'll be a lot more eyeballs on esports coming up in the next year than there ever have been before.
Injury is a real focus for the gaming industry. If you look at sort of the top 100 publishers, so the supply side of the business, it's really owned by Asia. David touched earlier on the kind of the sophistication of the product of esports in the West. And I think, when that hits the scale and the excitement of what's going on in Asia, then that's going to be crazy.
One of the things I enjoyed hearing David and Tom talk about was the idea that the 21st century only just started in 2020, because the pace of change and digital innovation has skyrocketed since the start of the pandemic. There's no doubt the stage is set for gaming to become a very exciting industry over the next few years. Thanks for listening.